Everybody to the Be Better podcast, and once again we are not in the Final K Global World headquarters in South Minneapolis, but we are on site at a mysterious and undisclosed remote location. We are at our friend Ian Leonard's house here in the Twin Cities. If you don't know who Ian Leonard is, then you need to pretty much get out from underneath the rock and hit the Google. But Ian, in a capsule, is the chief meteorologist for Fox 9 News. Uh-huh. There's so much more to Ian that we have been talking about. We had to start this off before we got too far into it. But Ian, welcome and thank you for bringing me into your home.
Yeah, no, this is great. It's I think the last time I saw you, I just finished the Maple Grove try.
Yeah.
In a blinding sideways rain. And thank you for that. That was great.
And you look so much better now. And you clean up so well. You clean up so well. And I got to tell you, I love the shirt, by the way.
Yeah, this is a good, and obviously on a podcast, it's hard to see, but
yeah.
It says it's a shirt that says Trust the Weatherman.
Did you have that made, or was that?
You know what? It's kind of funny. Kevin Durant, when he was in Oklahoma, was the weatherman. And that was his slogan.
What?
So Nike had thousands of these shirts made. And then when he gets traded.
Yeah.
And Nike's like, oh man, what are we going to do with all these shirts? So the Nike outlet had tons of them. And I wasn't there, but one of my cameramen was there. And he called, he said, you're going to love these shirts. How many do you want? I said, buy me 10. So he came back to the TV station and I have all these shirts now.
This is great. This is great. Does your wife have one? And is like,
you know what? You'll meet my wife maybe in the next half hour when she comes home, and you'll just see if you bring up me or anything like that, she'll roll her eyes and walk away. So no, she does not wear one.
No.
I like wearing, fun shirts.
Oh yeah.
Because I have the adult supervision required, all those sorts of things. It just sort of sets people a little off, I think, when they see me and realize, oh my gosh, that's the guy who wears a suit and tie and is very, stoic most nights on the air.
Yeah.
But he seems to be a decent regular guy. Look at his funny shirt. Oh, isn't he a funny guy?
He's such a hoot.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's like my wife when I wake up, she's like, so what t-shirt and shorts are you going to wear today? And I'm like, hey, haters going to hate. That's my job.
Yeah, right. She's getting all dolled up to go out.
Oh, yeah. She's got the grown-up job. I don't, I go out and just, kind of mess around.
Yeah.
And make sure the kids get fed type of thing.
I'm both of those. I have a grown-up job and I wear t-shirts and shorts to make
the
kids get fed.
You got the world by the tail.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's good. So kind of rolling your story back a little bit, you're originally from Edmonton.
Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
So growing up in Edmonton, because we're about the same age. So I'm 47.
I'm almost 53.
Okay. So growing up, Wayne Gretzky was my hero.
It's huge.
Like, I mean, he meant the world to me.
Sure.
I've got a signed photo that my brother-in-law makes fun of me for, that's kind of hanging in the basement. But growing up in Edmonton, I have to think that Wayne Gretzky probably meant something completely different to you.
You know, in Edmonton, there was, if you think about it, and a lot of folks would go, God, where is it? I know that's way up north.
Yeah.
It's way up north. It's 53 and a half degrees latitude north. So if you're looking on a map, go even further and then you'll actually see it. It's a northern outpost when you think about it. It's a northernmost city, over a million people in the northern hemisphere. When you get there and you see it, it's a beautiful city, but it is very much, if you were to split up Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minneapolis would be Calgary, Canada.
Okay.
St. Paul would be Edmonton, Canada. It's a very it's a very blue collar city. It's a manufacturing city. It's a city that's very proud of who it is.
Yeah.
And back then, we didn't have anything. We didn't have anything to cheer for. We would cheer for ourselves just so people might know who we were and where we were. And then all of a sudden, the Edmonton Oilers come from the WHA, go into the NHL, and there's this young kid with weird hair who talked kind of funny, and he's 19 years old, and he takes the world by storm, and he became our greatest gift, our son, if you will.
Yeah.
And we all would have followed him to the ends of the earth. And everybody wanted to be him and all of those Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, they were young kids and they were young upstarts and they did it differently. And for us, that was something we could identify with.
And you know, it wasn't just, I mean, I don't want to say it wasn't just Gretzky, but you think about, you know, Grant Fuhr, Yari Curry,
Andy Moog, Glenn Anderson, Mark Messier.
Like, I mean, all those guys. Like, that was the team. Like, that was maybe arguably one of the best squads ever put together in hockey. Maybe, like, the early 80s Islanders would have been in there, or the current Penguins are.
Like, probably. The Mike Bossy Islanders. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Or, yeah, the Penguins, sure. But back then, teams like that didn't exist.
No.
You know, there you always, you know, the Rangers had, who they have, Chico Resch, right? You look back at guys, and you know one or two guys from every team back then, because we all had the cards, right? We all had the hockey cards. But the Oilers, you can name 6, 7, 8 guys, and I think that's unheard of. And it's even unheard of today, because obviously salaries are way out of control, so you can't stack a team like that.
Yeah.
These are a bunch of kids who were playing for milk money.
And they brought a whole, I think, a whole focus to a place that really didn't have focus outside of maybe being, because when I was there, it really did give the feel of like an oil town.
It is.
You know, like it is like an outpost. It's like almost like driving to the middle of North Dakota and then going to Minot.
It's one big staging ground for the northern oil fields.
Yeah.
And it boomed.
It is.
And it stayed booming. And back then, we didn't, like I said, there wasn't anything else that we had.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to cheer for?
Well, you didn't have the Eskimos then.
Well, we had the Eskimos, but... okay, now, I never want this to come across as Ian poo-pooing the CFL, because at the time, I loved the CFL. But, you know, it's the NFL is just like, wow, man, the CFL is not.
Yeah.
And at the time, we had the Edmonton Eskimos. And yes, we went to football games, and we had the knothole gang, which is this this end zone crew that we could be a part of. But, and the Eskimos were dominant. In the 70s and the early 80s, they dominated the CFL, but it wasn't the world stage.
No,
that was the Canadian stage. The Oilers were dominating the world stage, the NHL, the Stanley Cup. They were it.
So tell me, do you remember where you were when you heard Wayne Gretzky was leaving?
I know exactly where I was.
Where were you?
I was working that summer for Molson Breweries. I was
Do you have any jobs that just don't rule?
It was a cool job. So I had a job as, I can't remember what we called it, it was called like special representative. My job was to drive around in a bright red Molson branded convertible Jeep all summer long. Jeez. And I would go out to the Coors Pro Rodeo circuit and make sure all the Cowboys were taken care of. Mm-hmm. And then I would go to all the universities and colleges and make sure that the Molson signs were up in the bars. I mean, it was the best job in the world.
Oh my.
So the press conference for Wayne Gretzky getting traded was at the Molson Breweries in Edmonton, Alberta. And out of the brewery, there was this big log house, and it was called Molson House. That's where the press conference was.
Whoa.
And I was there.
You were there?
Yeah.
Did when he left, you know, because I remember him going to LA was like, I mean, it obviously meant something to everybody, but did you feel betrayed? Did you, like, what was it, like, where was your heart at? Did you understand?
I think most Edmontonians knew that it was going to come when he married Janet Jones. Right. And who, I mean, the Flamingo Kid, one of the greatest movie.
Yeah.
I mean, you're like, Janet, wow. Uh-huh. And when he got married, you know, I think everyone thought of her like Yoko and the Beatles. She was going to break up the Beatles.
Yes.
And we all, I think you just sort of knew. But that's also that Edmonton mentality. You always know there's something better and you're not sure if people will stay.
Yeah.
You know, Edmonton's very, very much that way. And when Wayne Gretzky got traded, we thought, oh, man, this is it. It's over. But it wasn't. And it kept going. And I think it was a good life lesson for everybody in some roundabout way. Yeah, I mean, life goes on.
It's not all about one person.
No. And he went on. What he did for hockey in the United States, I think that's a greater lesson than anything he ever did on the ice.
Yeah.
Is that he was able to bring hockey to the masses where nobody... No marketing, no amount of money had ever been able to do it before. One man was able to do it.
He definitely did to hockey what I would say Michael Jordan into basketball.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are very few people like that. And, you know, the nice thing is that, you never had a, like, a Gretzky scandal. Mm. There were some, like, you may have some little things, but it never, like, he never went, like, bad. There was nothing bad that happened.
The funny thing is with and I believe this until, I'll believe this until the day I leave the earth. I think hockey players are generally wonderful people because you don't go to high school and then go to college and then go to the pros like you would in football, like you would in basketball. In hockey, you generally ride the buses. You get billeted out. You play junior hockey. Even if you play college hockey, it's not as glamorous as some of the other sports.
Oh, yeah.
And then hockey, there's the tiers. You know, you have to work your way up. Mm-hmm. It's not often that you're given a lot in hockey. And a lot of these guys are farm kids from small towns. They don't know how to be jerks.
No.
And some of them learn it, and that's part of sports. But if you've ever been next to Wayne Gretzky, he is the most unathletic-looking man in the history of the world.
Really?
You stand next to him, and he's just a tall – he's like me. If you looked at me, and you were standing next to me, you'd say, oh, wow. I don't think so.
I mean, he's no Phil Kessel. Because right. Phil Kessel looks like he should be like in a booking photo. Like he's the kid that ate too many Pop-Tarts, right?
Yeah, right. He looks like he could like rip a phone book in half.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. Wayne Gretzky, you know, 170 pounds soaking wet.
But just, you know, talented.
But so talented. And so his greatest ability was to see the ice and go where the puck wasn't.
Yeah.
And also help other players do that. That was his greatest ability. Jari Kurri wasn't that great of a hockey player. Wayne Gretzky was a great hockey player, and he made other people who played with him that much better.
And he not only was a great goal scorer, but I think he set records in assists.
Assists,
as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was a big thing. And that's one of the things that I took as a kid, is that he was good on so many levels.
He was selfless.
Yeah,
absolutely selfless. And he was like that in public too. And it's a good lesson.
That's great. And it's nice to know that they're out there. Have you? So did you ever get a chance to like shake his hand and do that?
Yeah. We should go get a photo op. I'm going to get pictures of me with the Stanley Cup.
Okay,
I mean,
okay. Now you're just rubbing it in.
Here's the biggest problem. The Stanley Cup was in Edmonton so much that, you know, after those 5 years, you're like, oh, it's going to be here all the time.
They just passed him on at the bar.
Right. And then all of a sudden it's like, what do you mean? We're not that good anymore. And, the Oilers just went into a big famine. And as the Oilers go, so Edmonton goes. You know, it's kind of, have you heard the story about Nebraska? That if the Cornhuskers football team doesn't do well on a Saturday, the overall economy for the state of Nebraska goes down by some percent, like 15 or 20%.
Really?
It's an amazing number, and I'm getting that number wrong. But it just goes to show how sports can truly affect not just a small town, but society.
Yeah.
And as the Oilers go, Edmonton tends to go.
That's interesting. I could see a lot of correlations there because, you know, sports are so tied in to our you know, just how we live and breathe these days. And it's not, and that kind of, we'll talk about your triathlon career here in a little bit, but it's kind of how people take, they see triathlon as like, you know, even though it is just like your hobby, people like live and die by it. Like people will miss their kid's bar mitzvah to get it, to make sure that they get their track workout in.
Somebody
right?
asked me the other day, they said, so I don't drink alcohol anymore because I just think it doesn't work with the amount of training I'm doing.
Yeah.
And somebody said to me the other day, what's wrong with you? Are you getting addicted to triathlons? And I thought to myself, I don't really know how to answer that, but I really, really like it.
I want to say yes, but I'm not sure if that's going to be well for me.
I shouldn't say that. But yeah, I mean, I'm addicted to it. But it really does. It changes everything.
It does. So the last little bit here about your tie-in with camp, about your home country and with Edmonton is you have a performance background.
Yeah.
You know, not in like sports performance.
Well, somebody's really been working the Googles here.
Well, here and here, we'll tie this
all
into
right,
hockey.
Sure, okay.
So follow me here.
Yeah.
So for kids like me growing up, SCTV was like what we were able to watch when we couldn't watch Saturday Night Live because we couldn't stay up. Second City Television.
Yeah.
And one of the things that, you know, Second City Television brought was like some amazing, you know, actors out there.
Yeah.
The John Candys, the Eugene Levys, the Joe Flahertys, like the people that are staples in, you know, in comedy now, like they all, like many of them came from Second City, but you had a chance to be with them and perform with some of those.
Yeah,
groups.
It's so, When I was growing up, I came from a performance family. My father was an opera singer in England, and my mother was in the chorus line. She was a dancer. That's how they met. So performing was a big part of being a kid in our family.
Yeah.
And I loved comedy. We grew up, my parents are from England. They emigrated to Canada in the 50s. And so we grew up with British comedy. And, you know, some people love it and some people don't. I adore British comedy and everything about it. And I started doing improv comedy in about seventh grade and started actually getting paid to do improv comedy in troops. And fast forward now, and most people know the show Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yep.
Well, that was born out of something called theater sports.
Okay.
There's a theater sports troupe here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and they have them all over North America. And it's great improv comedy, and there's wonderful actors doing it. So I did theater sports. And CBC Television, Hockey Night in Canada, yep. that's a
Don
big
Cherry.
Canadian. Yeah. So CBC Television did a pilot with us. And we did, I think we did six or seven episodes. But back then, you know, improv comedy in the 80s was like, my gosh, improv comedy, pish tosh, that's terrible. So it obviously didn't work out for us, but we kept doing plenty of stage work. And through the stage work, you know, the SCTV was filmed in Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
At its latter stages, it moved to Toronto. But when it was at its best, it was in Edmonton.
Yeah.
And it was really raw, grassroots comedy. And they were just having fun and trying whatever was outlandish. So, yeah, I've got to be on stage with a lot of those people. I was on stage with everybody in that troupe except Rick Moranis and John Candy.
Wow.
At one time. And the funny thing is, and I think it's like anybody you meet, you're not sure what it's going to be like. And afterwards, there's always the, you want to get a beer?
Of course.
And and that's better than being on stage with those people because you're getting to see them. And most of the time, they're not on. You know, they're like most really good comedians. It's a switch.
Yep.
And when you see them and you're hanging out with them and you're just being interpersonal with them, it's the best.
Because you get to the real person.
Yeah.
You get it. You get beyond what you have as a preconceived notion of who they are.
Oh, Joe Flaherty is such a neat guy.
I would imagine that. I was a huge fan growing up. And I think maybe because, you know, Northern Minnesota and we had a tie-in, but my connection was Strange Brew. The movie, yeah. You know, with you know, the Great White North and
Bob it's like North. Everyone says to me, how come you don't say A?
Hey.
I'm like, I just don't.
But I mean, because when you started talking about your job at Molson. I almost like
Elsinore.
Yeah, were you like mouse inspector? Because if you haven't seen the movie, like it's what maybe I think one of the top like three hockey movies ever.
Sure. You know, it's based on Macbeth.
I could totally see that.
Most people don't realize that. It is actually based on Macbeth.
Well, Max von Sydow was like, I mean, he brings so much stature to that movie as well.
Yeah.
But that was like, that was probably one of my favorite things.
But the brewery, Elsinore Brewery, where they go in and they, you know, as a Canadian, you would say, when I go to buy beer, I ask people, you want a 2-4? I still say that. And people look at me like, what are you talking about? Oh, a 2-4 is a 24 pack of beer. And they go, yeah, a case. And I go, no, it's
a
2-4.
No, 2-4, yeah.
And if you get a 6-pack, that's a half sack. And a case is 12 in Canada.
Of course.
Yeah.
Do you have from that show? Do you have any favorite skits that you have that maybe?
I love. Well, now you know I'm in TV, so I like Jerry Todd, who is the VJ, and it would be Jerry Todd, and he had the very deep voice, and it was always
That was Joe Flaherty, wasn't it?
No, it was Rick Moranis.
Oh, that was Rick Moranis.
And every song was Michael McDonald. you know, so it's great old stuff.
Like yacht rock.
Yeah, it's basically what it was. I love that. I love the Schmengi brothers.
Yes.
I love Johnny LaRue.
Oh.
Where Johnny LaRue had the he did his exercise video, mm-hmm. and it was at the fridge door, and it was open and bend and up and close, and you know all of those things. Edith Prickly, the station manager for SCTV, I love all of it. I
always had like a hidden fascination with Guy Caballero.
Yeah,
like you know, just I don't know what he was like. He seemed like he was the outsider of the group, and you know, and he was a little bit of a baddie, but
Man, that brings me back.
Yeah.
You know who's a huge fan of SCTV? My co-anchor, Jeff Passel.
Really?
Loves SCTV. And he's a good hockey guy, right? Played at the St. Cloud State.
Yep.
Still has the Minnesota state record for the most penalty minutes in a game.
God bless him.
It's like, wow, way to go, dude.
Hey, if you're going to be good at something, be good.
Hold that one up. Yeah, don't mess with him.
I went to St. Cloud State, so I don't want to say followed in his footsteps, but I had followed him for a long time.
Sure, sure.
And so,
he loves SCTV though, and it's fun to talk about it. And when you watch it, a lot of it still holds up because it was zany.
Well, if anybody's looking for a Christmas gift for you or a
box set, perfectly,
just get the box set.
Love it.
You know, and send it right over.
Yep, or a 2-4 of Elsinore.
Oh yeah, there you go. good times. So let's now move into your Iron Man career. So, and I say career.
I think career might be overshooting a bit here.
But so. How did you get involved in triathlon? What brought you into the sport?
So 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. We found a little lump in my lower lip. And it turned out that little lump was a large tumor that was growing underneath the skin. And for people who know about, most people know about melanoma. Mm-hmm. But this was a type of skin cancer called squamous cell. So... you know, there is nothing like sitting in a doctor's office and having somebody tell you you have cancer. I've been around, you know, it's been in my family, different types of cancer, and I've been around friends who've been diagnosed with cancer. But until somebody tells you you have it, it's something that resonates in your brain and still bounces around in my brain when I just say the word. So they had to take off a third of my lower lip. And in my, you know, my business, that's not a good thing.
No.
And I will tell you the people, my cancer doctors were amazing. I had, eight surgeries in one day. And they had to keep taking more and more of this tumor in my lip. And the next day I had plastic surgery from a man named Dr. Peter Hilger, who does a lot of NHL players. And my doctor was able to find him and make sure he was in town. And he said, we're going to try and save your lip. And stitch it up. And if people who know me know I talk a little differently now. I can't really eat soup. I drool a lot.
Soup's overrated, by the way.
So as I came through all the surgeries, then I had to go through the chemotherapy. One of my best friends, who's my tri-training partner, he said, we need to do something. Let's do something. And I'm like, well, what do you want to do? You know, you want to go around the world. Let's buy motorcycles. Let's have a midlife crisis. Exactly. Yeah, let's go. He said, let's try a triathlon. I'm like, you're an idiot. Look at us. We're 50 years old. That's a ridiculous statement. And he said, let's do it. Let's really do it. I said, okay. So we signed up for the Buffalo Tri. Okay. Just a sprint. And then we said, let's do the Minneapolis Tri. And that was an Olympic. And then I did the Minnetonka, which was an Olympic. And then I did the Maple Grove, which was Olympic. And then we were done. That was last summer. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, that's it. Now what? Okay, next midlife crisis, please. Now serving number 33. And he said, no, we have to keep going. It's time to step it up a notch.
Okay.
I said, what do you mean? The Olympics are plenty. Thank you.
Yeah.
And he said, let's do a half. I said, you're crazy, man. But I said, yes. And he said, put it on Facebook so everybody knows you're committing to this right now. So I did. And he quotes that still to me. I'll finish a training run. I'll text him. And say, my phone's been vibrating, and it's him. So his name's Alex. He lives in Boston.
Okay.
And every day we talk 3 or 4 times just to make sure we're still on track. So 70.3, Madison, this summer.
Awesome.
And we're committing to doing the Scottsdale Full next year.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Two great races.
They were until I got involved in
it. So I think the Madison one probably can be an easy choice because it's local.
It's so close.
Yeah, it is very
traveling,
close.
Traveling with your bike and everything, it's a lot.
It's expensive.
There's a lot going on there.
There is.
And he can fly out here and we'll drive out to Madison and our family will follow us on the Saturday and cheer us on for the race. So this is your podcast and obviously it's all about the tri world. So it doesn't make sense for me to sit here and go, you know, it's really kind of hard.
No,
but it's really kind of hard when you start to ramp up to that next level. Mm-hmm. I think anybody who's in some decent shape can muscle through a sprint. And then anybody who works a little harder can muscle through an Olympic.
Yeah.
You know, muscling through and actually being successful are two completely different things.
Absolutely.
And I think now I'm in between muscling into and trying to be successful in my first half.
Okay. How do you define success?
Hitting my goals. I think that's my success in all parts of life.
Okay.
Is if I have a goal, can I hit that goal? And if I'm shy of the goal, did I do everything I could to hit that goal?
Yeah.
And to me, then I have been successful. Maybe the number isn't there.
Yep.
But if I've done, it's the same thing I say to my kids. If you can't get an A, but I see you work so hard and you're so dedicated and you come out with a B, then you win. Because of your hard work, because of your perseverance, because of your dedication. And I think that's what I try and do with myself in the tries. But there's you know, the two brain. There's the, I'm going to do it and I'm successful and I'm a silverback gorilla, hear me roar. And then there's the other side of the brain. The professor's like, you know, your knee's kind of hurting. You should slow down your pace and we don't want you to overdo it. So there's these two sides of the brain.
So you got a professor and a gorilla on your shoulders? It's like
somewhere in between, I got to keep telling both of them to shut up so I can just keep going.
Exactly. So, and you know, when people think about making that bridge into that longer distance, it now the things that come into there are pacing, hydration, and nutrition. And I'm guessing those are pieces that you're now getting to explore more than you did before, whereas hydration and nutrition might have been, you know, hey, let's get a really cool sports drink that we can drink afterwards versus what's going to keep me going that won't like give me GI distress while I'm on the bike.
Yeah.
And then what is going to feed me as I start to go in maybe a little bit of caloric deficit onto the run.
And putting that together is, so this past Saturday I had a 3,100 swim and then a 2.5 hour bike. So there had to be some sort of a plan in place.
Oh yeah.
You know, what I was going to eat pre-swim, what I was going to eat in between, what I was going to take on the bike.
Yep.
And, you know, my coach makes me write out an entire calorie plan. It's not just the training plan. It's Perfect. Also my calorie plan.
Perfect.
And it's hard. You know, you can't have, I'm talking about tri podcast, but for me, I can't take a bunch of goo blocks and then a bunch of goo gels and just think all that sloshing around in my stomach is going to be good. My guts just go crazy.
It's all the sugar is what it is.
Yeah.
It's all the simple sugar. But you think about what makes a kid throw up on Halloween when he comes home and he just binges on all the candy he just, you know, ate from the neighborhood. You can only literally eat so many M&Ms. Because I've tried that before.
it's the same thing with pina coladas, all the sugar.
I was going to say margaritas because that's what happened to me the other day. But it is so true. I think people don't understand it, that you have to. And then when you make that move up to full Ironman, and that's it's a whole other world because the big mistake most people make is they think, oh, it's twice the distance. I'm just going to eat twice the food.
Right.
And that's absolutely insanely wrong. Because there are definite strategies. And I don't, you know, one of the things that I have always tell clients or the people that I coach is that there are three things that you have to do well in order to do well in Ironman. You have to have the correct pacing, correct hydration, correct nutrition. And you mess any one of those up and your day goes sideways.
Right.
You think about it. That's this balance. And that's where I think, you know, the longer distance races almost become like this thinking man's game or thinking person's game.
There's a strategy. Absolutely, strategy.
You can't just go off and, like, I mean, sprints are fun because you basically just, you know, you're like a Kentucky Derby horse. You just put the blinders on and you go, and you look at nothing else. And you just go until you throw up or you pass out. or maybe not.
Right.
I mean, that's just me. But with the longer distance races, you have to think. And you know the people that go out too hard, and you just have to, and it takes everything inside of you not to go after that person.
Right.
You know, it's like, why is that person faster than me? There's no way they should be. Maybe I need to speed up. And then all of a sudden you're off your game plan, and then it goes sideways and it goes wrong.
And that's what I'm learning.
Yeah.
The strategy, my pace, making sure I run my pace and doing my race strategy. It's a lot of, I think most people think they know, you know, and you know this from a coach.
Yeah.
You just think, I mean, come on, man, I'm going to ride my bike. I'm going to swim. Come on. I'm a runner. This shouldn't be that hard.
Exactly.
And as soon as you get that mentality, you're going to be in some big trouble.
Yep.
And most people I think who do triathlons are alpha.
absolutely.
And they don't like to be told
no.
what to do, how to do it, and know you're doing that wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm no different. And, you know, I wasn't taking my day off last month. So I'm 5 weeks out right now. And last month, you know, Sundays are my day off. We wake up as a family, we have breakfast, and we go to church. And it was a good day off. Well, I stopped having a day off, and I kept training through it. And it was the stupidest thing I've ever done. But I thought, well, I'll just go for a 5 mile run. How bad can that be? But it threw everything off. I wasn't stretching. I wasn't rolling. I don't need to roll. Rolling is for the old people I see in the gym.
Yep.
I started rolling. By the way, rolling is magic.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Absolute. I cry and I laugh at the exact same time when I'm rolling.
My wife
will yell into the basement, "Are you okay down there?"
Yes, I am.
Because,
so,
you know,
I
think you can always tell a triathlete too by how much junk is in front of the TV somewhere in the house.
Yep.
You know, downstairs all winter long, there's a treadmill right next to a bike on a kinetic trainer, and there's rollers and weights and, you know,
all kinds
TYR bands. There's everything all over the place. And my kids just go downstairs and they're like, "Oh, Dad's stuff's all over the place."
It becomes the most used room in the house.
It does.
Get yourself into some Normatec boots. There are a few.
I don't even know
Normatec
what that is.
Boots are recovery boots, and they're basically they use them for
they're
therapy.
The inflatable things.
Yeah, so that's going to be your next level aspect of recovery.
I'm going to have to ask my wife for extra allowance.
There you go. Get start saving your pennies, set them aside. Get your list
I have
going.
Seen them.
They
Steve
are,
Gunther has them.
Yes, he does, and they are unbelievably amazing. They
wow.
are night and day the best product that you can have for recovery. We used to have them at my office, and I would wear them like while I was doing work. So, you know, I'd be like on a conference call and you hear the, and they're like, "What's that?" I'm like, "Oh, sorry. Normatec are just filling up right now."
Oh, that's awesome.
But you got to like sit there with like straight leg.
Right.
They are just a game changer.
See, I just found, I mean, way away from that, I just found Ultragen.
Okay.
And I don't know why or how or if it's in my head, but as a recovery drink, I think it's fantastic. And obviously, I'm not trying to, you know, drop a name.
Hashtag.
By the way, I'm available for sponsorships.
Room on your uniform?
Yeah, I do. I just found that, and I think it's amazing. But it's one of those things, too, when you go into a store, I think there's sticker shock in everything that is try.
Absolutely.
You start with shoes and then, you know, singlets and all that other sort of gear, then glasses mm-hmm. and helmets. Oh my God, the bike.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, the bike.
Yeah.
And and the wetsuits. And then when you start thinking, well, I'll just save money on, I'll go buy some other kind of protein powder at a big box retailer. And you realize it's garbage.
It is.
But then you buy some of these other ones and they're $70, $80 for a little container. That's huge sticker shock for somebody like me who's I wouldn't even call myself part-time. I'm sort of every once in a while time triathlete. And we have two kids and, you know, there's college coming and all those sorts mm-hmm. of things. And you don't want to overplay it, but it dings you a lot.
It is. And if you think about the things that you shouldn't cut back on is the fuel. Like
right.
you don't put cheap gas in an Indy car.
Right.
Because it's cheaper.
Right.
You know, you have to fuel the engine properly. And it is something that I don't think you can or should skimp on, but it also is something that's very individualistic.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that, and that's one of the things like when I see people go to expos and they listen to these pros talk about what they're doing and they say, you know, like, "What are you eating to be good?" And it's like, well, they say this and then they go out and they change that. And it's like that, don't do that. We're very individualistic on what fuels us properly. And there's
anything with chocolate. I don't get that one.
Oh.
People have like chocolate spearmint gel. And I'm like,
Oh, no. They melt too. It's melts.
Weird. I like the noon tabs.
Oh, yeah.
I love
noons are amazing.
I love the noon tabs.
My kids discovered those this weekend. We got a big shipment from our sponsor at Leanna K Foundation.
Oh, cool.
And they were drinking them. They were like, they must have went through like 20 noon tabs this weekend. I'm like, what do you kids do? And they're like, oh, it's so cool to watch it dissolve.
Fizz and everything, except when you drop it in a bottle and you sometimes the bottle has a lock top and then you unlock it,
boom,
and you're like, wow, now I smell like salted watermelon. This
Yay!
Is awesome. Yeah, there's a search. It's like a search and destroy mission when you're getting ready to do you know a first race like this.
Yeah.
And I've been through every kind of. I've tried them all, And I think that's hard, trying to find what works for you.
Yeah.
And my coaches encourage me to do that and find what works for me. Yeah. It's the same thing I tell my interns. You know, in the course of my career, I've had over 20 interns, and I think 18 of them are working in television today. And I tell them all, don't try and be like me. Don't try and be like someone else on TV. If you see something that you like from somebody, take a little tiny piece and then make it your own.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same thing with people telling me about, oh, this works for me nutrition-wise. I try it and it doesn't work for me. So I'm not going to do it,
yeah.
But I'm going to keep finding what does work perfect for me.
Well, that's the exploration of it.
Yeah. And boy, there's some awful stuff.
Oh, there is. So, you know, one of the last things I want to ask you about was, you know, obviously you're like, you know, you are in touch with the weather. I would say you have a symbiotic relationship. How do you use that to your advantage? I mean, because you have to know stuff.
Yeah.
That, like, because you, first of all, you know it before we do.
Yeah.
And you probably have insights that you believe or that you can predict that maybe you may not push out to everybody else.
It's funny. Ian Leonard's top secret weather. You know, here's something that I would tell everybody. There is so much great weather data that's available now on your handheld personal device that I see people don't use. Here's a perfect example. On Saturday, I coach my daughter's soccer team, and everyone shows up to the fields at 5 o'clock, and I say to the commissioner of the soccer association, we'll only be out here for about 5 minutes. I think we're going to have to suspend play. And he says, really? Why? About 5 minutes later, off in the distance, my phone zaps, special weather statement, lightning, we clear the fields. And I'm thinking, how did you not look at that?
Yeah.
Or at the same time, my daughter and I are driving back from soccer, and I see a family out in the rain, cycling, trying to get out of the thunder and the lightning and the rain. And I'm thinking, why didn't you just have a quick glance at your phone before?
Exactly.
But, you know, that's obviously I say that because weather is everything I do. It's a huge passion for my life. And I know that it doesn't, that isn't for everybody. But just have a peek at your phone before you go outside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great way to just avoid that sort of a thing. For me, I hate humidity.
Okay.
I don't like to, you know, when you, what's the guy's name who came up with the MAF? I can't remember his name. Anyway, he
talks. I'm not that smart of a person, remember.
He talks about how the amount of performance goes down with every 10 degrees up on the temperature scale.
Okay.
It's an inverse ratio. Yes. And so, yeah, I think everyone can say that. I like running when it's 65. Most people don't say 90. Yes, let's go run.
Yeah.
And so I search for the days. If you know, on Training Peaks, my coach puts all of my things in. Mm-hmm. If there's a big run plan for a day when it's going to be 90, I'll text him. I'll say, I'm going to switch that run. I'm going to swim that day, and I'm going to run on the day where it's 62 degrees in the morning. Perfect. So for me, I can use my forecasting to my advantage.
Yes.
But I think everybody can do that. I just think people, it doesn't dominate people's life like it does mine.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the weatherman.
It's
what I do.
Well, and I think it is. You do talk about how it's such an easy thing to look for, and it's a safety piece, especially if you're doing a long bike riding session and you're going a ways out. There's nothing worse than getting caught in a storm, you know, because you're not out there ready for it.
Right.
You're in clickety clack shoes, wearing little or nothing, and you walk into a convenience store. Everybody's like, going, "What are you doing?
What are you doing, weirdo?"
Yeah.
And it's easy to not get caught that way. You know, just email me. If you're going out for a long ride, just email me. I'll help. Now watch. Zing. My email just starts going ding, ding, ding.
And that your email is Jay Passel.
Yeah, Jeff Passel to Fox 9. Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things that, you know, we want to empower people. And then people say, oh, you're just being a weather dork. Nobody cares about the weather that much. And truly they don't. Because they want us, that's my job, is to care about it and to take care of people and to get on TV when the weather's going to be bad. But even on a sunny day, just have a glance at your phone and know what's happening in the next 5 or 6 hours.
Yep.
You know, and then in the coming weeks, I'm going to have some four and a half, 5 hour rides. And obviously, I'm going to look at it,
mm-hmm.
but I would love for other people to look at it and educate themselves too. Like you talk about triathlons, you're a preacher. You're in your pulpit. You're saying you got to hydrate. You need nutrition. You need a plan. And people go, "Wow, he's a certified coach. I should listen to him." In a way, I want to be your certified weather coach. And I would love people to listen to me, not always on the air, but by having a peek at your phone.
How can somebody best get that? They follow you on Twitter? Is that where? Or
well, Twitter and Facebook, yeah, those are ways to interact with me and see stuff. But and this is a shameless plug, and I want everybody to know I get absolutely zero for it. But our weather app is free, and it is the most downloaded weather app in Minnesota. We've got over 700,000 downloads. And it's got a follow me feature on the weather app. Okay. So you when you put it all together, you hit follow me. So if you train with your phone, great. I don't ride with my phone. But wherever you are, if you are in Bemidji with your family and there's a severe thunderstorm warning, your phone's going to ding.
Okay.
If you're in Eden Prairie and that's where you live and there's a severe thunderstorm warning, your phone will ding. It's got radar. It has the forecast. It'll help take. It's like having me in your pocket.
Aww.
It's like having Ian along with you all the time, which is kind of a scary sort of thing.
Well, you know, there are upsides and downsides to everything.
Yes, yeah, that's a definite downside. It's like my wife. It's like my wife giving me a to do list.
Oh.
Your to do list is to download that app and just have it. Right. You don't have to use it. I get nothing for it. I think people who use it will get something for it.
All right.
And as I say that now, I know my wife's just coming in the garage.
Now she's walking in.
Hi, look at us. We're podcasting.
How are you?
I'm awesome. How are you?
Good. Now you can actually ask for permission to get your Normatec boots.
Yeah, honey, I need some extra allowance to get something really expensive to make me feel better.
Awesome.
That's my awesome wife. She does personal training.
All right.
She's a rock star.
She looks super fit.
Yeah.
We may have to talk afterwards about some personal
training.
Be happy
to
training.
Talk afterwards. It's one of my favorite topics.
Oh, that would be great.
Jasper.
Well, Ian, I can't thank you enough for sitting down with me and inviting me to your house and sharing coffee and everything.
I don't even think we talked about anything, did we?
We totally did.
Oh, okay. We talked a lot about Wayne Gretzky.
Let's recap. We talked about hockey. We talked about comedy in Canada. We talked about training for triathlons. We talked about the weather. I think it was some big topics. Maybe we come back. We'll if we want to at some other time, we can come back and have a further in-depth discussion about any one of those. And when you get, I would say next year when you get ready to go to your Ironman in Arizona, we should definitely have some chit-chats about that because it's a great race down there and there's lots we can talk about.
Let me get through the 70.3 first and make sure I can. You know, it's funny. You start out with a goal and you're like, I want to do 6 hours.
Yep.
And for some reason, I texted my training partner this morning, I always thought my run would be about 8:45, 8:50 pace, decent pace. Lately, I've been running at like 9:30. I'm getting slower. What is going on? I don't understand. But I think race day, yeah, I'll be able to pick it
up. Yeah, you always race faster with a number pinned to your shirt.
Honey, we need numbers to pin to my shirt for training, please.
Or we can chase you.
There we go. We'll send Jasper after.
Yeah, good.
All right. Well, Ian, thank you so much for your time. And everybody, thanks for joining us again. And we look for your comments and feedback. If you want to put that on iTunes for us, that would be great. And otherwise, have a great day. And we look forward to talking to you next time. Thanks. Bye. You can hop on this tip. Find out what it's here. It's in my soul. Music, so music, so music.